Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book, In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Of course, you know what to do if you like what you see, what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, just like this. It's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. And you can grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the show a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired. That always helps out a lot. We've had some fantastic guests on lately, including actress Alexis Wren, here to talk about the movie Latency, Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth, Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, actor Jeff Daniels, Russell Crowe, Derek Trucks from Tedeschi Trucks Band, Carly Pierce, director Richard Linklater, Adria Arjona starring in The Hitman, Sal Vulcano from Impractical Jokers, Brandi Carlile, just an example of what you can get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with Andrew McCarthy. Andrew McCarthy, famous for, oh my God, some of the greatest movies of all time, especially if you're an 80s fan. Yes, you do know him from Pretty in Pink, from Mannequin, Weekend at Bernie's, St. Elmo's Fire, Less Than Zero, Class, just to name a few. He has made a documentary. It's out now on Hulu, and it's called Bratz, where for the first time, he takes a deep look at that white hot moment during the 80s culture when a new young Hollywood was dubbed the Brat Pack. And he's brought the friends along with him. It's the first time they've all told this story. Emilio Estevez is here, John Cryer, Leah Thompson, Rob Lowe, Ali Sheedy, Demi Moore, just to name a few of them. Andrew's going to discuss why he finally stopped running from this part of his past and making peace with the term that dropped onto them, as well as deconstructing why it all happened and how it came to impact all of their lives still to this day. Andrew's going to go on to talk about the closure involved with a dive into one's past, the different reactions and relationships that the other members have, and, of course, the power of the music from those iconic films, including the Pack's unofficial theme, Don't You Forget About Me. It's all that and more. We're talking about the documentary Bratz, out now on Hulu and Disney. It's Kyle Meredith with Andrew McCarthy.
Hello, how are you?
You have got this documentary called Bratz. It's the story that I think a lot of us have been wanting to hear for a very, very long time. and it's finally arrived. I loved it so much. I just want to say that. I also want to say that the book that came before this, your book, was one of my favorites that came out around that time. So first off, thank you for telling the story.
Oh, well, thanks. That's really nice. Thank you. I mean, yeah, the movie would not have happened without the book, for sure. I mean, several years ago, I decided to kind of finally take a look and see what the seismic event in my life was all about, seeing I'd run from it for so long. And so I sat down and wrote that book. And it was really illuminating for me. I kind of finally came to understand what all the public always knew that we didn't know, which was that this is actually kind of an amazing, beautiful thing, the Brat Pack, and not this albatross that I always sort of perceived it as. So that was a really liberating kind of experience to realize that. And so then when that was done, I said, well, what did everybody else feel? I know what I felt now that I've kind of looked at it from such perspective and distance. And so that's why the movie came out of that, just because I know we all had the same initial response to it, which was, this is like bad. You know, it was a negative thing. It was sort of cast an aspersion. And then over time, it's grown to become this sort of wonderfully iconic, affectionate term for a moment in pop culture. Then we are sort of the avatars of youth for, you know, your generation. And to realize what a gift that is, you know, and that took me a long time to understand that. So I went, that's a long-winded answer to say I went looking for, to see what other people felt.
Because to be in a, you know, this is touched upon in the documentary, but to be, for any actor, celebrity, to be in the white hot center of a pop culture moment, I don't think is difficult at any point in time. And then someone slaps a name on it, which they tried to do multiple times later, other journalists. There was I looked it up. There was the Viper Club, which was that early 90s Keanu River Phoenix. There was the Frat Pack, the Wilson Brothers, et cetera, you know, and all of that stuff. Never really took in the exact same way. But we've heard those stories, you know, of what it's like to be just in that those defining moments and how it's not about you.
That's exactly right. It's not about us. And I think what this movie helped me clarify was how it all came to be, because it was a confluence of events that made the Brat Pack sort of emerge like that. And like I said, it had nothing to do. You know, we were the kids who were there, who fit the clothes, who were there, you know, at the time. But it was really, you know, it was a seismic cultural shift in that movies suddenly became about young people in a massive, full-on way, the way they never were before. In the 70s and all that, up to that, movies were grown-up entertainment, you know, auteurs and, you know, The French Connection and whatever. These kind of grown-up movies. And then suddenly, you know, Hollywood realizes, oh, wait, kids go to movies 5, 6, 7 times. Grown-ups go once. The hell with them. Let's make movies for kids. And that's what they did, like, overnight. And every movie that came out, you know, this. And what was amazing also is that there was such a unified youth culture in that time, you know. Now everything is so fractured, it's impossible for us to understand that. But everyone was looking in the same direction. Everyone on Friday night went to see The Karate Kid. Then the next Friday night, everyone went to see, you know, Teen Wolf or whatever it was. You know what I mean? And so everybody was all pointed in the same direction. And then David Blum comes along with a really witty phrase, and that gives a handle so you can lift this satchel of youth movement on and carry it around with you. And we fit in that bag. Yeah. You know, and we just didn't like it because, you know, who wants to be called a brat and who wants to be in a pack? But, you know, I certainly missed early on what the public instantly understood was, this is awesome because you represent us.
Would it have made a difference if it had been a different name?
Sure, I think so. I mean, the Awesome Young Dudes, sure. but Brat Pack's such a good witty name, though. I mean, it's such a play on, you know, what it did in the positive was, it tied us into a, you know, Hollywood continuum of elite kind of people. You know, the Rat Pack is, you know, it's obviously playing the Rat Pack and all that. So it tied us into that sort of legacy of Hollywood, which is kind of a beautiful thing. But again, early on at the time, and you also have to keep in mind that when these youth movies took over, the old guard who were running Hollywood suddenly hated it. It's like, who are these punks that are taking all our jobs? So when somebody comes in and calls them a Rat Pack, the old guard goes, yeah, see? And they got their comeuppance in a certain way. But all that was in this microcosm of show business, whereas the wider world kind of went, these kids are awesome, they're us. And, you know, and always felt that way. So it was a weird, but, you know, the movie to me was really about that journey. It's about how we relate to the events of our lives, whether it's the Brat Pack in my case, it's the Brat Pack, and I can make a movie about that some people will go see. But I wasn't so interested in purely the Brat Pack of it all, but just how do we experience and then re-experience the events of our lives as that we go on. Because, you know, nothing changed in those 30 odd years except me, 180 degrees, my relationship to it. You know what I mean? So how are we, you know, the truth today is not the truth tomorrow.
And we'll be right back right after this Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Andrew McCarthy.
What I loved at one point, I was realizing, you know, in the middle of it, and we're starting to see the succession of people that you have on camera. And I thought, this is almost like the dream sequel that we never got to any of those movies, you know? Who were they when they grew up? And of course, those are fictional characters versus the real people. But you're talking about those fictional characters in a lot of way. I mean, that representation of the Brat Pack had to do with our connection to these, you know, these characters. And so I let myself just kind of drift away with that. It did. It felt like the sequel that we never got. And I loved that.
Well, that's, I'm glad. What it is we've all grown up, you know, and it's nice to see everybody sort of still there, still kicking, a little the worse for wear, and, you know, but we're still here. And, you know, there's what I found so nice about the experience, that there was so much goodwill for each other that we had, in a way. That was the biggest takeaway and surprise for me, was how much goodwill there was and how much affection we had for each other, in a way that perhaps we didn't have when we were young. I certainly didn't. I was a scared kid trying to, you know, get my next job and figure it out. And, you know, there wasn't time for all that. But now we could just kind of look back and sort of look at each other and kind of go, ah, hello, dude. You know, and it's a really warm kind of feeling.
Yeah. And knowing that everyone sort of ran from it in that way, as it's told in the documentary, the movies you didn't make together, you know, the movies you could have made together. Of course, that's always a thing. What could have happened, right? Well, do you feel like that's changed a little bit now? Because, you know, you were on Blacklist with Spader. We've had Molly and Allie together on her show. Like, it's starting to seem like there are these little moments where the door is opening a bit again.
Oh, my God. Yeah, if we couldn't work together now, my God, come on. I think it'd be great to kind of get the old band back together in a certain way, because it just, when I saw everybody, it was like, there was an instant recognition, the way you recognize, you know, we're from the same litter. You know what I mean? We're puppies from the same. I was walking my dog not long ago. My dog hates other dogs, and came across this other dog that looked just like her. And they started playing. And then I chatted to the owner. Turns out our dogs are from the same litter. And my dog was just had this instant bond with them. And I kind of feel that way with Denis and Rob and Emilio. You know, we're like, we just recognize ourselves in each other, you know, in a way that it's like family. When you go back to old family, that it's like, you can't, for all the warts and all, you can't substitute that for anything else.
I love the argument of who's in and who's out. I love that the argument happens inside the whole thing too, because we were having the argument long after the film had finished. You know, it's like Robert Downey Jr., he went to the high school with Emilio and Charlie, and it was all this stuff, you know. And Leah says the adjacent, right? And John Cryer is in there where he says, I am not.
Well, I mean, that's because the Brat Pack was always sort of more an idea than a fixed thing, you know? I mean, there's certain undeniable members, me being one of them, Rob, Emilio, you know, but yeah, there's some peripherals and some adjacents and some outer rings, and yeah.
So for you specifically, was it about the closure? Did you need closure?
Well, I don't know if I needed closure or if one ever really gets closure, whatever that is. It was about reevaluating and re-experiencing the past and bringing it up into the present in a certain way. You know, I think I talk in the movie that, you know, there's that great Eugene O'Neill line, the past is the present, it's the future too. You know, the past isn't in the past. The past is living in us, and I'm a result of all of the things that happened in my past today. And if I re-examine how I experience them and alter my perception of actually my experience of them, I'm doing that in the present. And so then I look back in a very different way, and then consequently I'm moving forward in a very different way. You know, if I still resented the Brat Pack now, after all these centuries, I'd be moving forward in a different way than I am now moving forward and sort of going, that was probably the biggest professional blessing of my life.
Yeah. Do you find that then that helps you? I mean, in whatever you're doing moving forward professionally?
Well, professionally, I don't know. Just personally, I think it's a value to sort of, you know, just own things in a positive way, you know, to see it more clearly. I wasn't seeing it clearly back then. You know, I'd say much more. When someone approaches me on the street and goes, oh my God, the Brat Pack, those movies. And they start talking and their eyes glaze over and, you know, they're talking to themselves and their youth. And I'm just a mirror back to that, you know, and that's an amazing gift that I can give people, to just stand there and receive their love. You know what I mean? And then they walk away going, yeah, and they feel great. And then I feel great. If I'm going to sit there and still go, no, there wasn't any Brat Pack. I wasn't a part of it. It's like, wow. It's like Demi talks about in the movie. That's an againstness, you know, in a certain way. So I guess I learned from Demi. So to kind of embrace that, and, you know, and at this age, really, if it's not warm and fuzzy, what is?
To me, Rob Lowe, I thought it was interesting, of course, everyone's reaction, how they reacted to it. You know, Emilio almost seems a little, still a little bit guarded, you know, the arms crossed there, across the bar from you. But Rob and Demi were just so positive about it. You know, like, why? I don't know if you can speak to that. Like, why weren't they as reserved as maybe some of the others?
I don't know. I mean, it's just different people's journeys in life and where you catch them at certain moments. You know, one or two people didn't even want to talk about it and wouldn't even talk, didn't want to talk. So I'm like, wow, okay. So their relationship still, you know, it was a big seismic event in all our lives. You know, Rob is just more sort of savvy, I think, in that the sense of realizing much quicker than I did that, you know, what I just said to you, how much the public loves it, and what a beautiful thing that is. And it's a bunch of a couple of Hollywood elites that didn't, that thought it was a negative thing, you know. I think we've all felt all those emotions that everybody sort of represents in the movie at certain points, you know. And to me, just happens to be super. She was the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the movie, you know. I mean, she was just spouting this wisdom that I would go write down.
You could see your mind being blown right in the real time in those
Totally, you could
moments.
do. I think I said at one point, just say that again. I can't even comprehend what you just said, but I know it's really important to say it again.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Andrew McCarthy.
I was talking with Allie on her previous project. She was wearing the same shirt, which I wear the same shirts a lot, so that's not anything. But I wondered, I was like, what's the odds that we just did that interview on the same day? But I remember talking to her, and she was and this was a year ago, and the news had just came out. You had said that you were doing it, so of course I brought it up with her, and she even talked about like how she had the reservations at first. But you were you, as she said, and she loves you. But she talked about how methodical and how you wanted to really deconstruct it. And that's, you know, when you make a film, when you make a documentary, you've got choices. Ultimately, and I know we've talked in and out of this in the interview, but what was the choice? Like, what did you want this documentary to say in that deconstructive way?
Well, I certainly wanted it to be, I mean, like you see cameras in the movie, you see when I'm calling someone on the phone, I'm calling them. It's not some recruit. I want it to be utterly transparent and you just come with me. And so because the Brat Pack was so this sort of veneer in a certain way, I wanted what I was doing to be completely transparent, you know, and just come along. A lot of it is done in the sense of like a journey and a road trip of going to these people's houses and traveling to them. And I wanted you to be, you know, in the passenger seat, be my co-pilot sort of, and just talk to you. Talk our way through it. And one of the people said, okay, do you have some questions that I can look at before we talk? And I'm like, no, I don't. I just want to come talk to you. I don't have an agenda except to find out what your experience of it was and where you're at with it now. And that's all. And like I said to Emilio, I think in the movie, if I'd seen somebody else who I'd worked with 30 years ago, I'd have nothing to say. But I know when I walk in to talk to Ali or Rob or Emilio or to me that we just have to say, so the Brat Pack, and we got a lot to talk about. So I was my only sort of agenda in the way I went was I just wanted it to be, and it was a very subjective thing. I'm not trying to make the definitive. This is what the Brat Pack was. It was very subjective. Here's my experience. What was yours? And now in sharing that with each other, how does that alter? Because we have our own individual isolated experiences, but if we keep them separate from each other, it's not such a good thing in life. So we need that sense of community. And we were the only micro community that experienced this. So in a certain way, I felt like I had to reconnect with people to sort of have, as you would say, you know, the closure if such a thing exists. But it just to sort of validate the experience in a certain way.
I like that you use the words walking and traveling, because then I'm immediately tied to your other projects right there. And like, look, it all connects. All of these things
Well,
in life.
you know, it does. It's a travel writer in me. I read a lot of travel writing stories, and a lot, and going on a quest is always a great travel, a story arc. You know, you begin here, and now we're going to go and hopefully get to there. And it always works because it gives it a narrative propulsion. When in doubt, you know, you go back to the traveler.
Yeah, I've got to bring up the music, because the music of those movies in the 80s, and here I am surrounded by it. Also, the music that you used inside this, what I wrote down, some Steve Winwood, Lou Reed, I believe, Forever Young. Like, so first off, by the way, kudos to the soundtrack of this specific documentary. But that music, like, for me, you all as personalities, is tied much into that music as the movies were.
Absolutely. I mean, those movies, the soundtracks are at least half those movies in a certain way. You take away those soundtracks. I mean, and that's also what John Hughes was brilliant at. He really loved all those kind of new wave, sort of British kind of indie artwork, kind of indie-ish, if such a thing existed back then. But those kind of artists, he put them right in the mainstream and it changed the way pop music was done. You know what I mean? And so I think, yeah, the music's kind of, and we had an incredible day when we're in the editing room. What about this song? No, that song's no good. This song, so there's a lot of that because everyone has their 80s kind of songs. And you have to be careful with the music because music so instantly takes you back, So it was fun battle. And everybody, I have to say, all the artists were incredible because we didn't have the budget for their normal fees. And we just kind of went, everybody's getting this much nothing. And will you do it for this much nothing too? And everyone went, come on. I went, please. And they went, fine, take it. Everybody was like that. So except for one or two, and they're not in the movie. So that was great how generous all the artists were with their songs. Because I guess hopefully they realized too, well, wow, those songs are part of this too.
Yeah, I laughed a little bit when the Back in the High Life came in because I was trying to connect the dots, just even lyrically to the whole thing, and I don't know, the chuckles that come along with that. But of course, and ending with "Don't You Forget About Me," how can you not? Like
Well, how can you not? I mean,
that's the
that
theme song.
when Judd hits his arm and stick it to the man like that, and don't you? I mean, it's the only way that movie could end.
I have a friend who was tied into that song, and maybe you knew this, but was originally pitched to Billy Idol.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was originally
Wow.
pitched to Billy Idol, and the Furs got it instead, for through a lot of different reasons, and Billy
Wow.
Idol would go on to record it later, on a greatest hits, like in the year 2000, like much later, when that story kind of got out, and how different that might have made things.
Yeah, right. It's like all that. Yeah, that's funny. I never, that would have been different. But yeah, that song is like, that's the anthem of the Brat Pack, really, isn't it?
That's it. There's a joke at the end. Did you talk to Judd?
I did. Judd became our unicorn, and I did talk to Judd. Yeah, I talked. Actually, at the beginning, when I'm talking to somebody on the phone, it's not identified. When I say, "Don't tell me now, don't tell me now," I want to get it all on film. That's why I was talking to Judd because when I called him up to do it, he started launching. Oh yeah, let's talk about this, and he started launching in. I'm like, "Slow down, dudes! I got to get a camera," And then eventually, he disappeared, and so we were tracking him, trying to find him. And then finally, he called him and said, "Yeah, I don't want to do it," which I thought was kind of fine and great in the sense that. That's informative about the Brat Pack too. You know what I mean? That you don't want to talk. This 30 odd years ago, you don't want to talk about this. Okay, that's cool. But it's just, it's a compli. It was a compli. As Ali said, it was a complicated time.
Beautifully told, and I'm so happy that you did it. And the books and everything that you do, I'm such a big fan. I love watching what you're doing these days too. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Andrew. Bratz is on now, Hulu, Disney Plus, all those. Big thanks to Andrew. Big thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button while you're here so you can get all the interviews that we put out every week. Three a week, just like this, noon every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. It'd be doing me a very big favor that I'd be very appreciative if you also gave the series a rating and or left a review as well. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews. Lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from REM, the Jesus and Mary Chain, Angel Olsen, Till Tuesday, Howard Jones, New Order, the Smashing Pumpkins, Leona Lewis, Valerie June, Ramones, David Bowie, Bonnie Raitt, and my interview with Tom Bailey of Thompson Twins. Just a little bit of what you can hear every weeknight. Again, it starts at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
All right, thanks, man.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.